Hey, JB here, and welcome to another great episode of The Wolf's Den. I have two awesome guests today. They're a team, Charlie and Ben from Charisma On Command. These guys have a website, actually a YouTube channel, where they analyze influencers and famous people and see what they're doing right, what they're doing wrong, what body language they use, what tonality, what type of language patterns. It's really, really interesting. And we get into the heart of really what makes someone charismatic, what doesn't. And of course, we agree on most things because there are these great truths to communication. And when I teach people the straight line, I'm always going down to that. What is that, you know, that lowest common denominator? What are the basic things that you must do to get into rapport with someone, to convince them, to persuade them that your way of thinking is correct, that they should even take the time to listen to you? So when I am interviewing these two guys, I want you to focus on the fact that while they don't teach the straight line, they've studied the straight line, of course, and read my books, their take on what creates charisma, that attractive force, that magnetic pull to someone is not surprisingly very similar to what I teach formally with the straight line. I think the big difference is that with the straight line, I break it down into a usable system. So in other words, it's one thing to understand what charisma is and some tips and tricks, right? Versus having it as part of a cohesive formula. Because certainly charisma, rapport building is only one part of persuasion. It's only one part of influence. It's very important because if you lack charisma, if you lack that ability to be perceived as someone who's worth listening to, so you even want to spend the time trying to find out what they are trying to offer you, well then, you know, good luck trying to close the deal. But again, it's only one part of a much greater and more important package, which is the ability to get your point across to another human being or group of human beings in a way that moves them to take action, to take an actual action. That's what I call goal-oriented communication. So how do you communicate with someone in a way where you have a specific outcome, a goal in mind? They're thinking way A, you want to get them thinking way B. They're thinking that maybe they should think about whatever it is that you're trying to sell them. They want to think about it, call you back. And you're trying to persuade them that, no, you shouldn't really want to think about it or call me back. You should want to buy now. At the end of the day, remember, sales, influence, persuasion, and sales in the context of sales is about getting someone to buy now. Charisma is an important part of that. So let's cut to this interview right now, but first, a quick word from our sponsor. All right, listen, you deserve to feel happier, to sleep better, and to experience the medically validated results of Headspace. Headspace is meditation made simple. And for Wolf's Den listeners, you can get a free 1 month trial if you sign up today, right now. Go to headspace.com/wolfden. That's headspace.com/wolfden. All right, so we got Ben and Charlie. Charlie, Ben. Ben and Jerry, Charlie and Ben. All right, Charisma On Command. All right, so question. Define charisma. Who wants to start? Charlie, Ben, Ben, and Charlie.
I'll go for it.
All right, so I think of it as leadership in every different form. So you can lead in the terms of a conversation. You can lead in terms of giving a speech in a boardroom. You can lead if you're speaking to a girl at the bar. But the idea is that whenever you meet someone, nobody knows how it's going to go, right? So if you have charisma, what you can do is you can lead the conversation in a direction that leads to some sort of connection. Maybe you're getting a deal done. Maybe you're making a sale. Maybe it's a date or something like that. But where we think of it is any way to lead a conversation or an interaction somewhere where you might like it to go. And that's, of course, different depending on the context.
So would you say that charisma is a tool that allows you to lead the conversation?
Yeah, so I would say I think of it in terms of mindsets, and then there's, of course, things that people do specifically. So, I mean, if we were to look at you, and we might one day break down a video, you have a particular cadence that you use to speak. You have gesticulations that you use, and I'm sure when you do straight line selling, there's words that you need to emphasize, particular phrases that might be stronger. So you've got that technique toolkit, but also you've got a mindset. And this might be something that you didn't have to think about when you were doing it, but for a lot of people, they think, you know, what if I blow this sale? It might go wrong. And the guy who gets the sale is thinking, I bet I have something awesome to sell these people. I'm sure that this could go well. So we talk about the mindsets on the one hand, and then there's the techniques and all of those other things that need to be done in a more practical way.
let's break down charisma. If you could break it down into components, what are the components that you would say, sort of like, it's, you know, it's this, and this. There, so these pillars, you know, I have broken it down. I'm not sure if you guys have ever seen my stuff. You know, I try to do things in a humorous way, right? So I break charisma down one way. Let me hear you do it first, and I'll tell you my way. You show me yours, and I'll show you mine.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, well, basically the way our course is set up kind of breaks it down, I don't want to say from start to finish, but into different segments. So there's when you first meet someone, that's going to be one part of charisma, right? Making an amazing first impression, which is going to be different than, say, making a deep connection, right? And that's going to be different than the internal part of charisma that has to do with confidence. And so we bucket it into six things: amazing first impressions, internal unshakable confidence, storytelling, being a good conversationalist, the magnetic presence, where I'm sure sometimes you walk into a room, people can notice you before you speak, right? And I don't mean that in like a woo-woo way where you necessarily emanate energy, but just the way you walk and stand and hold yourself. And then persuasion, basically getting people. So if you are talking about the aspect of charisma where you're making an amazing first impression.
Let's slow down for a second. So let's go back. What was the first thing? So I think that there's you're mixing up two things here, not in your own system, but in the question I'm interested in.
I misunderstood.
What are the actual, like, because within your answer, you gave answers, but there was some stuff that was like a different answers to different questions. What are the components? Not, I'm not saying like, okay, there's initial charisma, deep charisma. What is charisma? Like, what defines, how do you become charismatic? Is it a combination of, and you said things in there that you answered my question. So what are those things that actually make someone charismatic in any situation?
Sure. So I think it's funny. There's the things that make you charismatic in the situation and where they come from.
Mm-hmm.
I think where they come from is the mindsets.
Okay.
But let's handle
that separately. The actual physical outcome.
So then where they come from, where people perceive it, it's in your body language. It's in your tonality. It's in your eye contact. It's in the way that you speak. And then it's also in what you say.
Okay.
Which is to say, like, there's different types of charisma, right? So there's like Bill Burr's charisma, which is loud, over the top, funny. There's Barack Obama's charisma, which is inspirational, but they have similar shared overlaps, which is to say strong body language, strong tonality, things like that.
The reason I'm laughing right now is because I had a feeling that if you really were the real deal, and I know you guys are because I've heard great things about you, right? So it would have to come down to the same components that I've broken it down to. Because I know I'm right. No, because I've said this for umpteenth years right now. So I'll tell you how I say it in my own, you know, inimitable way, right? I say charisma consists of three different things. Number one, the effective use of tonality, right? That you know, what you say, it sounds right. Number two is appropriate body language, which you hit on too. And the third thing I say, which is probably the most difficult of all for many people, is not saying stupid shit, basically, that the words themselves have to make sense. Mm-hmm. So when you see someone who's charismatic, typically, and you mentioned like eye contact, well, to me, that collapses into body language, right? You know, where you smile, maybe how you shake hands, all body language. And I think also, you know, within body language, what's often overlooked is not just how you move your body when you're speaking, it's how you move your body when you're listening. It's your facial expressions, the ums, uhs, the grunts, the groans, right? To show that you care, that, you know, you're just like them on some level, right? So let's break those. So would you say that's a pretty fair assessment? Number one, tonality is huge, right?
Yeah. The only thing I would add is if the third bucket is going to be don't say stupid shit, then the context defines that. Because if you're a comedian versus flirting versus work, there's going to be different rules. And I think sometimes people get confused because they see Russell Brand be incredibly charismatic, saying things that they could not possibly imagine saying. Which you wouldn't say if you were negotiating a business deal.
Yeah, I think there's context, and B, there's something called the law of congruency, meaning that you need to be congruent for who you are in reality and also what role you're in. In other words, the way a doctor would speak to a patient is going to be very different the way a plumber would have charisma to someone they walk in their house, yet both times there's massive charisma at play. So it's about the law of congruency. How would you dress? Well, you would dress the way you'd expect an expert and someone that's confident.
I think that's a great point too, because when you see Russell Brand and then you see what he says and you see his body language, you wouldn't necessarily say is charismatic in the sense that it's loungy, it's slouch, but it fits with
it's congruent with who he is.
Exactly. Yeah. And then when you look at, again, let's say like a presidential leader, they might be standing up very straight. Their charismatic body language is so different from him but it fits with their style of charisma. So yeah, I think congruency amongst your, I don't want to say persona, but like amongst your bucket. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's definitely important.
I had a question for you. So sure. When you're teaching it, it sounds like, do you focus a lot on the behaviors? Do you go into the mindsets? Because this is something that we've gone back and forth on is, how do you get someone to get there, right? Mm. Let's say you're talking to someone who's not there. Do you start by giving them a cheat sheet of kind of what you had, which is a script, and when you hit this word, you got to nail it? Or do you talk about, what are you thinking while you're saying this? So how did you go about it?
You have to deal with both, because if you only deal with one, so I always say I can get any monkey to read from a script and sound amazing. Mm-hmm. Getting someone to sound great in a sales setting, right? That's very different than teaching someone to have charisma that would transfer to anything around them, a situation that they could, sort of walking down the street, they could transfer one skill. Now, what you find very often, I remember when I trained all of these kids, you know, very many, many, back before you guys were, how old are you guys?
33.
Okay, so you are, oh my God, barely even born when I was teaching this stuff, right? So I remember a lot of these kids would come in, they would really lack charisma, lack the ability to really, you know, to walk into a room and be that person who was noticed and be deemed a person of power or interest, and you teach them in a context of selling and it would transfer over to their whole life. That being said, though, I was also, without realizing it, hitting on all their belief systems, their standards, their mindset in terms of their state management. So what I do now, many years later, when I started teaching it in a very systematic way, I divided it into these, you know, sort of two worlds. Like, you know, there's the inner game, the inner world of success, and or sales, persuasion, and there's the outer world. So the inner world consists of all the things that happen up here between your ears before you ever go out into the world and take action or try to influence, persuade, or communicate. Mm-hmm. That's inner world stuff. Things like your ability to manage your emotional state. Are you in a state of certainty or you're in a state of uncertainty?
Sure.
I believe that at the highest level, sales is the transference of emotion. The emotion you're transferring is certainty. Mm-hmm. In order to transfer certainty, you have to have certainty, right?
Sure.
So you have to show up in a state of absolute certainty. That's number one, right? Number two, your belief systems, you know, and there's so many things you could pile in there, but, you know, beliefs in yourself, belief in what you're doing, belief in the product you're selling, but a lot of self-belief stuff as well. People have all these limiting beliefs about their, you know, about what persuasion is. Like my parents, for example.
That it's a bad thing, right?
They thought it was terrible. Yeah. Oh my God, salespeople, marketers, the lowest form on earth. And because of they lacked money their whole lives, they were brilliant. Brilliant, hardworking, smart, educated, broke, because they thought that selling and persuasion was evil.
Yeah, there's also a weird stigma that you might see in sales as well, where if you're a natural, that's okay. If you're a naturally good salesperson, if you're naturally funny, but God forbid you're reading a book on how to be funny or reading a book on how to be a salesperson, then I feel like people have a lot of limiting beliefs and they feel like that'll get them judged.
Mm, interesting. So I think I'm hoping that that's probably shifting at this point because of people like me and you.
Yeah, I was going to say that's our entire business.
Yeah, you guys are, you know, educated people. I can't have to meet millions of people I've, you know, touched over the years with my system. And at the end of the day, here's what I believe. I believe that it's really difficult to live an empowered life unless you have the ability to communicate your ideas, your hopes, your dreams, whatever thing that you think has value, an idea, a concept, a product, a service, right? So I couldn't imagine moving through the world without having that ability.
Sure.
And I've learned and proven that it's a learnable skill.
Yeah.
I believe it's a required skill, a required course. Every human being needs it, whether you're a mother trying to influence your kids to make their bed and do their homework. You could be a teacher trying to influence students on the value of education, a pastor trying to sell your congregation on a moral principle or a certain religious idea. You could be a politician, God forbid, selling people on a certain, you know, political, you know, your constituency, a lawyer trying to sell a jury on the innocence of your client. It doesn't matter what you're doing, business, personal, we're always trying to get our point across to other people in a way that connects with them and moves them to take action. Without that skill, I don't know. It's like, what could a Wozniak do without a job? So, you know, that's the classic example, right?
It's funny as I listen to you because we've broken it down a number of ways and you'd asked and we gave you one of them, but we've also talked about types of charisma, styles, and you mentioned high conviction, certainty. Mm-hmm. And as I listen to you, I mean, I see it in everything that you do, your movements and the way that you speak, you are certain. The words that you choose about the things that you say, this is what I believe.
Yeah, I'm very, exactly. And it's funny, today I was doing the same thing.
It nails the sales piece and I feel it. You know,
it is a belief, self-belief.
Steve Jobs reality distortion thing going on. Boom. There's we talk about other kinds because what we find is that some people, that doesn't match them, or they're not going for that. So take someone like an Oprah Winfrey. She might not be super high conviction, but what she does is when she sits next to you and she touches your hand, she makes you cry. You know, she opens you up in that way. Or Russell right. Brand, who is incredibly funny. Right. He's not totally certain about everything that he's doing. But then we've got other people like Conor McGregor, who falls more into your category of high conviction.
I would think, see that's where I think, I don't disagree. I think we have a different definition of certainty. Hmm. Oprah Winfrey is the most certain person within herself. What the type of certainty she's sure. selling is certainty about her empathetic qualities, certainty that she cares about you, certainty that she feels her pain, feels your pain, mm-hmm. certainty that you can trust her. We're not just talking about selling a product. When you're a salesperson, you're selling the product that you're selling, or the service or the good, but you're also selling yourself, mm-hmm. that you connect with someone, that you're trustworthy, that you have their best interest at heart. So Oprah is, when she's sitting next to you and she touches you, that, you know, what you're saying is this woman cares. Mm-hmm. She feels my pain. She understands me and she has my best interest. And like, I don't think you could sit next to her and not feel the certainty
and not feel it. Yeah.
oozing out of her. It's just a different outcome, as you said. So it's mm-hmm. like about context, right? So would Oprah make the best salesperson of a product that was like, you know, a software? But maybe not, you know what I'm saying? But then, well, she could probably adapt to that. But the point is for what she's doing, what she's trying to communicate, she's really certain. It's like, but the certainty is on a different level.
And it mm-hmm. looks different.
Yeah, and it looks different. But the same rules, what I find is the same rules always apply. And it starts, to me, it starts with, number one, I don't want to teach you to be like me. I want to teach you to be the best version of yourself. So in other words, it's the idea of who you are, what's congruent with you, but there's this best version of you that you can bring out by learning. And I think what happens a lot with a lot of people, I want your opinion on this, people, there's a certain tone deafness to people when it comes to tonality and body language. Mm-hmm. They actually think they sound good. They think their body language is correct. And it's awful. They just don't realize it. So mm-hmm. what happens by making them aware, hey, you might think that you sound persuasive or look right, but you actually don't. So you raise their awareness and give them something. It's like any sport. You want to play someone, you do. You watch a video in slow motion. Slow it down. Show them the traits that are required. And then it starts with simply, you know, practice, repetition. But ultimately, you could start internalizing it. So I believe in understanding of what's there. It has to start with really understanding what's going on, breaking it down to steps, and then showing people exercises they can start adopting it. And I think the human brain starts to really rewire itself pretty quickly. People can learn. I'm sure you guys buy it. You can learn charisma. It's an learnable skill.
Yeah, no, I think there's kind of phases of getting people onto that. Because the first one is, I think there's this myth that it's like eye color. It can't be learned, right? So first you convince people charisma is just a skill, like shooting a basketball. And then you show them what's good. That's all our YouTube channel is. Here's what Oprah does. Here's what Jordan Belfort does. So you're telling them, here's what it would look like if it was perfect. And then that third phase is what you're talking about, which is like, let's get a real understanding of where you are using daily exercises. Let's get you to where these people are. So yeah, I think of those as the phases in terms of helping somebody to kind of get to be the best version of themselves.
And we've been at, I mean, the camera teaches you a lot about yourself, or an honest friend. There was a point in time where I thought wide eye contact was the way to connect with people, and I would just stare. And I had a friend come up to me and be like, dude, what the fuck are
slow
you
motion
doing?
Video is amazing. Yeah. Stop and start yeah. video. Yeah, no, yeah. Whether it's learning how to hit a golf ball, a tennis swing, will have charisma. When you actually see people, we know what we do with the straight line systems. We have what are called critical incident scenarios. We'll actually set up a mock sale, and you actually tape someone and you let them see themselves in a situation
oh, yeah.
of influence.
We do
and,
something similar
and
with
like,
storytelling.
Oh my God, they don't realize because they see what happens. I think the human, it's interesting, the human brain often allows the words to come out correctly, but the tonality somehow gets lost, they get stuck yeah. inside you, and the body language, they don't, it's not congruent, it's not fully formed communication, right?
Yeah.
So like I look at communication as being enriched greatly when it's accompanied by the right tonalities and appropriate body language.
Yeah, no, and what's interesting is a lot of people, it's strange even in the Instagram age, have not seen a like long form video of themselves. So it's actually shockingly easy to fix, but people just don't necessarily know what they're doing. They don't realize how often they say or like or look at their feet. And then once you show it to them, it becomes so much easier for them right. to go, oh, okay, well, I just won't do that one thing. And so, yeah, it's crazy because I feel like charisma is one of the fastest skills to learn, but people don't know the steps to do it.
Well, you don't have the feedback loop coming in, right?
Right, when you shoot a basketball and you know it's going to miss, but it's weird. It's hard to get a sense for how often you say something silly or have the wrong tonality.
You're standing alone in the room, no one's told you that's your feedback.
Yeah.
Alone in the room. Let me ask you a question. So, what's the first step? So when you're teaching someone, so people will seek you out. They'll go to your website because it's interesting. I've seen some of the videos. They're really cool, right? They're really fun.
Oh, thanks.
And no, they are. They're great. And I agree with most of the stuff that you're saying.
We got to get to this. No, I'm very curious what you disagree with, but go ahead.
There's nothing I disagree with in the sense that sometimes when you get too granular with something, I believe in teaching people sort of layers. Like, you know what I'm saying? There's, if you get too granular, it's like overwhelming. Mm. So, and I'm just watching videos. I'm sure your courses are like that. You probably teach things very systematically, layer one, layer two, layer three, layer four. You know, a 30-minute video, there's so much like, whoa. I mean, so what you get, that's what I meant.
100%.
Yeah, I'm not saying anything incorrect because the observations you make are observations. They're right. They're correct. And I laugh at them. But sometimes it's almost like I'd rather teach someone. My methodology is based on this, right? Number one. All right, it starts with what words, and I'm teaching it in a sales setting, right? Yep. So it starts with that you want to take as many things out of the equation as you possibly can. There's so much that happens in any sale or interaction you can't control. Mm-hmm. Well, let's try to control the things that we can, like what words we have to say. Now, whether you're selling in person or over the telephone, it doesn't really matter. There's going to be this sort of core patterns, we call them language patterns, right? Mm-hmm. And you could basically memorize, commit to memory, either read from people or commit to memory if you're in person, right? And while you might not have to say every word exactly the same way as it's written, at least gives you sort of, you want to understand the opening and the closing of each pattern. Because it almost serves like takeoff and landing into the, so if you know the opening and closing to each pattern you're working on, you can start connecting them together. Because what happens is with a lot of people, for natural born salespeople, people with natural charisma, their brain automatically sounds the right way, mm-hmm. moves their body the right way, and connects it all together, right? They don't have to think about it. What happens is the conscious mind, all that's done unconsciously, right? The conscious mind is far less processing power. Mm-hmm. Conscious mind is your focus and awareness, what you're looking at. So it gets it's like that spinning wheel of death on the computer, right? You max out the random access memory, the computer freezes. What happens is if you try to tell someone, okay, I want you to sound good, say this movie by this, they can't do it. So what I try to do is commit the opening and the closing to make that unconscious.
Sure.
Yeah.
And then so, because if you're something's unconscious, that means you're doing it basically automatically. So while you're doing that, you'd be thinking, where am I going next?
Yep.
Versus having to tie up all your mental energy. What I'm saying, I can't think about what comes next.
No, I completely agree with you. I would actually separate in the world of like the Wolf of Wall Street movie and then your selling technique courses or programs, our Charisma University program is over here. And our YouTube channel is in the middle, which is to say, like, the Wolf of Wall Street is how people get to know about you. It's entertainment. Right. Our YouTube channel, I call it infotainment. It's meant to educate you.
Exactly.
But it's not the step-by-step. So we have this thing, Charisma University, 30 days, step-by-step, every day builds upon the next. With the YouTube channel, we don't know who's coming in or out. This might be your first video. It might be your 50th video. And so
you're blending humor, learning.
Exactly. Right. It's meant to
overloading
entertain,
you.
Get your thing. And I'll often say in the videos, like, I'm going to cover 10 things here. You only have to do a few of them and you should focus on them one at a time. But it's meant to be helpful, but certainly I wouldn't say it is as effective as 30-day step-by-step Charisma University. So yeah,
let's talk about Charisma University. Sure. All right. Cause I want to promote it. Cause I think it's a great thing. And it's obviously a perfect message to market match. All my people love this stuff. Right. So tell me about it. How does it start? What does it cost? Have people find out more about it.
Yeah. So as you were talking, I was just thinking it sounds like the story of the people who are touching the elephant, the blind men touching the elephant, as they describe it, they describe slightly different things. And it's very much what I heard because you're talking about the beginning and the end. I go, oh, we have something like that too. And the habits that you say such that you're not in your little gear spinning mind. But we start with first impressions because that's where, if you're not in sales, that's where you're starting your charisma with most people. So the first part of a first impression is somebody shakes their hand, they say, how are you doing? And we start with, what do you say? Most people say, good, I'm fine. How are you? And right there, you're just not off to a great start. So we always start with be better than good. And I fail this test sometimes, but be phenomenal, be incredible, be amazing, be something. And it's starting that process of high conviction, leadership, you're injecting energy into the conversation. Mm-hmm. Then the questions that you tend to get in normal conversation are, and we flub this with you sometimes, but people ask you, where are you guys from? What do you guys do? right? And if you can knock that out of the park every single time, so what we have with that we teach people are scripts that they can build for their own life that hit on a couple of key principles to how they can get someone to want to ask them more questions. Mm-hmm. So in this case, we said, you know, from Philadelphia, we're sitting down to go, we want to get going with the podcast. But what I might say is, well, you know, I've lived all over the world. You know, I spent some time in Brazil. I spent some time here, but I actually grew up, you know, and that the person goes, oh, wait a second. There's six loose threads that I can grab onto here. I want to hear about Brazil, or I want to hear about your business, or I want to hear X, Y, and Z. And so it was just interesting to hear you talk about how you have these key phrases that you go through, but yeah, in an interaction, they just look, they're just a little bit different than what it might be in a sales interaction, which right. is where, what do you do? Where are you from? All that kind of stuff is how the conversation unfolds.
So if someone enrolls in Charisma University, right? Mm-hmm. So what's the landing? Is it charismauniversity.com? What is it? How do you find it?
Oh, that's a great question.
Yeah. It's charismaoncommand.com.
charismaoncommand.com/C-University.
Probably not the smartest URL. We'll
You'll find it if you're curious.
We're going to put a link up here on the video so people can see it. And those that are watching, it'll be on. I'll make sure they can find you guys. Plus, we'll do some stuff on Instagram together to promote it, right? Okay, so they start the course. Are there different price points? Are there more advanced courses?
It's $600, $597 for the 6 week. Well, yeah, it's 6 weeks, 5 days, and then there's bonuses to it. But yeah, so you go through, and Ben mentioned, we start at the beginning. We try to get quick wins. And this is to what you were saying. You don't want to overload people. We've tried teaching this a bunch of different ways. And one of the first thing I did was try to dump everything that I possibly could onto some poor person in person and say, do 100 things at once.
Yeah,
and then their head exploded and nothing got done.
That's what I was referring to with the video. Right? Yeah, exactly.
And the other thing with the, I think quick wins is an important one to highlight. We'll often see with the 6 week program, if you don't start with something that right away gets a result, people are less likely to go through it. So that be better than good, weirdly enough, it sounds obvious. People will just go do it for a day and come back and say, that was amazing. And now you have buy-in for a week. Mm-hmm. So now you can get them to the second module about confidence. So yeah, it's kind of structured, not just in the order of a conversation, but also to hopefully hook them with continuous wins and get those victories so that they'll be encouraged to go through the program.
And you guys offer payment plans for people that can't afford it. So you have ways for people to get in more cheaply if they're struggling a bit, right?
Yeah.
All right, listen, take it from me. Life is complicated. Even without COVID, you got to run your business, paying your bills, remember to pick up your children on time. All that adds to massive stress. Listen, you've probably seen the movies, so you know that I'm not successful because I'm the most even-keeled guy in the world. I've indulged in a lot of things in my life, and stress is definitely one of them. That's why I'm on Headspace, which is the only meditation app that has medically validated results. And for a limited time right now, you can get a free month trial by visiting headspace.com/wolfsden. This is an easy-to-use application for your phone that's going to reduce your stress level, improve your sleep, boost your focus, and increase your overall sense of well-being. You can get your free month by visiting headspace.com/wolfsden. You deserve to feel happier, and Headspace is meditation made simple. Go to headspace.com/wolfsden. That's headspace.com/wolfsden for a free 1 month trial with access to Headspace's full library of meditation apps for every situation. All right, so I want to tell you guys about one of my favorite parts of every morning. And that's when I have my Athletic Greens. Listen, Athletic Greens is my absolute favorite nutritional supplement. It gives me an extra boost for the day. If you know anything about me, then you know that personal performance is a very high priority for me. One scoop of Athletic Greens, I get that feeling, that tingling sensation when your brain and your body are really firing off together perfectly. And that's when I know I'm ready to go out and close at the highest level possible as a salesperson, as an entrepreneur, as a businessman. Makes sense? So whether you're training for a marathon, you're trying to lose a few pounds, or you want to elevate your energy and your focus, Athletic Greens is for you. And if your results are anything like mine, I can virtually guarantee you'll have that extra edge in performance that sets you apart. And here's the deal. Right now, Athletic Greens is offering a free 1 year supply of vitamin D and 5 free travel packs for the Wolf Den listeners. You'll basically never have to buy vitamin D again. Simply visit athleticgreens.com/bonus to get started with this limited time offer. Again, simply visit athleticgreens.com vitamind.com/bonus and get your free year supply of vitamin D and 5 free travel packs. One of the things with the straight line system I teach people is that, you know, you have 4 seconds. Now, you could say there's 3, Harvard said there's 2nd. I said this back literally in 1988. You have 4 seconds to establish that you're 3 things. Number one, sharp as a tack, enthusiastic as hell. This is in a sales setting,
right?
Expert in your field.
Right.
And the idea is that, number one, that you're sharp, you're on the ball, you're not going to waste someone's time. Number two, enthusiastic. And I don't mean any mistake people make with that is they think of enthusiastic as like that guy Tony Little on the Gazelle. Hey, come by the Gazelle. I'm talking about something very different called bottled enthusiasm. As you said, better than great. Like, listen, how you doing today, John? Like, not how you doing today. Like,
yeah,
I say, how you doing today means you know that I know. That I know that you know, I don't give a shit how you doing today. It's a perfunctory greeting we give in English. And so I say, how you doing? Yeah, good guy, fuck you. That's over, right? But I say, how you doing today? They're like, well, he really wants, this is the tonality, he really wants to know. You actually care.
Yeah, you talked about that transfer of energy,
exactly,
right? That transfer of enthusiasm.
So and then most importantly, though, of all, though, is the third one, an expert in your field. So what I realized very early in the game here, when I was in my early 20s and running this small firm at the beginning, is that I was able for some reason to like close people that my kids, I was 23, they were 19, 20, right? They couldn't. And I realized what was happening. I had a certain way of sounding that people perceived me as an expert.
Sure.
And when you are perceived as an expert, people will defer to you. They'll allow you to control the flow of an encounter. So the idea with the straight line system is that you want to be, we'll say perceived, sound like an expert. And when you're perceived those 3 things, sharp, on the ball, enthusiastic, expert, people will say, okay, it's a person worth listening to because they can help me achieve my goals. So what's the kind of counterpart to that in your world?
So, I mean, the one thing that I guess you could potentially be an expert at is the conversation. So we're talking to people who want to just go in, communicate better with their coworkers, communicate better with somebody at a bar, make a friend if they're at some sort of networking event. And what we talk about oftentimes is that you can communicate either the news in conversation or you can go a level deeper and talk about values, things that you care about. So when somebody asks you in the office, what did you do this weekend? A non-expert way of answering that is to tell them what you did. You know, first I watched this movie, then I watched this, and then I watched the ball game. A deeper way that goes to recognize is that this is just some stupid perfunctory thing that we all say because we don't know what to say next to the water cooler is to talk about something that you give a damn about and say, you know, I watched the ball game because I'm crazy about the Nats. I've been a fanatic since I was 6 years old and my dad used to take me to the game and he was in town this weekend. It was so great. And when you talk about things that you care about, what you do is you go a level deeper. And even though that person might not care about the Nats or baseball, they can relate to doing something with their dad that they loved. Mm. And then they can respond and say, oh, that's crazy. My dad's coming into town next week. We're going on a snowboarding trip.
Okay.
And so when you go in deeper into the values things, the things that you care about, I don't know that that makes you an expert. But what we find is it has a broader degree of being able to connect with a wider range of people, even when on the surface level, there might not be a ton in common with what you did this weekend and what they did that weekend.
The other thing I'd say is I think depending on the context, when you're selling, expertise is what matters, right? But if it's something where you're trying to make friends, maybe it's that you make the people around you feel good. So just establishing that you're positive or that you're funny. And when you're approaching a person that you're attracted to, maybe it's about conveying that you're confident or again, that you're fun, that you're attractive, that you're playful. So
that you're an expert Lothario.
It's kind of like you're not necessarily.
Have you guys studied any of the dating stuff like that?
Sure,
out there,
right? Lots of it.
And what's your thoughts on that?
I think there's a ton of bad advice and I think there's a lot of great advice. And I think the hardest thing is when you pick someone to learn from, it's very hard to only learn some things. And so I think when you have someone who's maybe a little scummy, has some good advice, it's tough to pick out the good stuff without adopting some of their bad stuff. Mm. And I think that's why that industry is so tricky. Because I do think that like layered in there's some really good advice.
Well, I knew Neil Strauss, who's wrote the book The Game originally. Very smart, great writer, by the way. Smart,
fantastic
guy.
I think that's his greatest skill.
Yeah, and within that book, there's a lot of interesting stuff that does overlap with things that I have taught for many, many years. I think the problem is that the intent of a lot of the people is not a good intent.
Yeah.
In other words, it's one thing if you're looking to who am I to say about not hooking up with lots of girls? I mean, I did, right? It's easy for me now. I'm older. I'm like, oh, why are you doing that?
And sure.
But no.
Well, I don't think that's a bad intent.
Yeah.
But the intent is like you want to leave them better than you find
them. I think there's a problem, this whole idea of negging, you know, making this sort of thing. I don't like it. Just to me, it's like, I think there's a more positive way to go about connecting with people and making yourself have value to them in their eyes and making them feel insecure.
So there's a great example from the game. There's this idea of making up a fake question to start a conversation. That's bad. It's lying.
I agree.
It's also totally unnecessary, though, because what it's trying to teach is
a much better version.
Don't walk up and shyly say, "Hey, you're really pretty. Can I buy you a drink?" Right. Instead, start with an interesting conversation. But that can be an honest part of the conversation. And so there's this thing
like lazy thinking. In other words, there's a much better version of that.
Yes.
Is to be interesting, be cool, right? But be congruent and honest.
And
recognize, mutually exclusive, right?
Recognize that people in bars specifically are out to have fun. And so if you approach them in a way that's low energy and boring, you're sucking the fun from them. You're basically taking value from their night.
Very good point.
Come in and make it fun. But then, again, the overreach is like, and the way you do that is by making up a story about, I think there's literally one about like little people having a fist fight outside. It's like, you don't have to do that. Just think of your own life and what's interesting or something in the moment that's genuine.
Right.
So it's weird. The dating industry is weird because it's got good stuff, but layered in with really
this is why
bad advice.
We talk a lot about the mindsets as well, because unfortunately what it boils down to is if you give everyone just the tricks, just the surface level stuff, they will just copy the thing that the cool guy said and it won't be true for them. And I assume it's the same in sales, which is if you're selling a shitty product and you're the most confident, charismatic sales guy, and this is going to work for you, but deep down you know it's not. It's like this went from being something that was amazing, you were going to share a great product with someone, to now you are screwing people all of a sudden.
And even if you get one sale, you're not going to get any more, because once they get the product, that's it. They're going to think it's crap.
Yeah, well, certainly there's a big, you know, there's two sides to it. One is, you're right. So like I always say that, you know, at the end of the day, you know, what makes a sale ethical, assuming someone's not outright lying, right? Mm-hmm. Is that, you know, are you leaving the customer in a better spot?
Mm-hmm.
Are you actually helping them? Is there value? What you're selling is, you know, that you're charging them X, but the value to them is a lot more. Well, that's, in some sense, you know, if you make some mistakes ethically, but that outcome is achieved, well, it's at least a safety gap that you're not hurting people. So I would say it's your safety gap. You want to be selling things that actually leave people in a better spot. But on the other side too, there's just this thought that, and then one of the biggest mistakes salespeople make that I see is they lie when the truth will do.
Yeah
exactly.
Like it's like, and it's almost like I call it in sales the truth well told, which I stole from McCann Erickson, by the way.
Yeah.
That was their phrase about, you know, back in big advertising, the truth well told. So the idea with when they teach you a straight line is, what is the absolute best version of the truth? In other words, there's many ways for me to tell you, let me tell you a bit about myself.
Mm-hmm.
There's 50 paths to say, well, I'm this and that. There's only one that's the best.
Yeah.
There's one that's truthful, honest, sounds amazing. People say, wow, oh boy, that's the one you want.
Mm-hmm.
There's many ways to describe your product. Only one of them is the actual best way. It's interesting, it's logical, it makes sense, it's cool, and it's honest. So I think a lot of it's lazy, lack of preparation. And what happens with many salespeople and people in situations in life is that when we run out of intelligent, smart things to say, we tend to say stupid shit.
Mm.
Or we'll default to things that we run out of the right things to say, and then our brain almost just fills in whatever comes out. And for those that aren't naturally adept, sometimes some really bad stuff comes out.
Sure, no, I think, and the dating parallel is the same, which is, let's say that you think you don't have an attractive job, so you lie about your job. It's like, well, instead, when you get asked what you do for a living, just say, oh, I do this, but what I care about is
this was huge
music,
for me.
Surfing, writing.
Yeah, I hated my job. People would ask me, what do you do? And
what
I found, I was a consultant. And so I just got deflated. What do you do? I go, oh, I do spreadsheets. That's not gonna go well. But so what I learned is, okay, that's what I do. So somebody asked me, what do you do? And I say, do you mean for fun or to make money? And they would always go, well, tell me both. And I say, well, for fun, I love the guitar. I've been so into guitar since I was 15 years old and I had a crush on this girl, Sharon, and I haven't given up ever since, right? And now I'm talking about guitar and she's interested. Well, what kind of music do you play? And she doesn't care about the spreadsheets. Again, she was, what we think of these questions that they're so literal, you know, where are you from? What do you do?
Yeah.
People are giving you an opportunity to tell them something fascinating about you that you care about. And so that's what we often try to do. I was also reminded as you were speaking of, you know, the truth well told. One of the tenets of sales is that you qualify. And it's the same thing in life. But what people don't understand is that they've learned the words to act like they're filtering people out of the sales process without actually being willing to filter people out of the sales process. And the strongest thing that you can do for yourself, for your own conviction in your product, is to say, this isn't for you. This isn't for you.
I'm a big believer.
You know,
it's a
and
huge
when you do that, oh my God, that person wants it. And so does everyone else you talk to, because they can tell that you're not trying to sling crap to people who won't benefit from it.
And also, you know, I think the biggest mistake that a lot of young salesmen make is they try to shove square pegs in round holes. Like if it's not right for someone, they'll try to just force it. And what happens is the person typically won't buy, and they'll say, wow, maybe I suck at closing. No, you're speaking to people who don't want what you're selling. They're not interested. You know, the idea I always say of sales is we're not looking to take people who are not interested and somehow use some clever way to make them interested.
Yeah. What a waste of time. You got such a short period of life.
I'm looking to sift through a universe of potential buyers. Yeah. I want to eliminate the ones who are not interested or are not right for my product. Yeah. Say, hey, you're not right, go there and get something else. I can't help you. And take those that are interested but not sure. Maybe they don't want to buy it right now, but they have a need, they want it, they can afford it, they qualify, and take that person and get them to buy now. That's what a true professional salesperson does. We don't take people who don't want something and make them want something. That's the biggest mistake. And once you make that leap as a salesperson, it's really empowering, because then it starts to say, wait a second. So maybe I need a lot more leads, actually, because I'm like, my problem is at the top of the funnel here. I'm not getting enough people to speak to, and I'm trying to shove everybody down this sort of into this box they don't belong in, you know?
It's also more rewarding. You'll feel that sense of a guilty salesman will go away because you're only talking to the right people. You'll be more successful, so you'll feel better. You'll make more money. Like, it's weirdly a virtuous cycle. It's bizarre that people don't see it that way, but for whatever reason, it's not natural to realize that.
What do you think about people who are very successful, but you would think they lack charisma, like in the traditional
sense?
Elon Musk, for example. What would you say about, how would you address someone like, does Elon Musk lack charisma, or is he actually very charismatic?
So this is something we've debated over. You know, does Mark Zuckerberg count? Because if you treat it as leadership and persuasion, well, he's gotten the entire world to sign up for his product and join it. Same thing with Elon Musk. We choose to separate the two and say that there are things that can get people to be attracted to you that we don't qualify as charisma. One of them is beauty, right? You can be what we might consider charismatically empty, but if you're a beautiful person, we all know that
people
with
20 million followers on Instagram that has
has nothing going on, people will flock to you, and we recognize that. And that's not what we teach. We don't do fashion, we don't do hairstyles, we don't do angles on Instagram. With Elon Musk, what he has is a track record of insane success. But I can tell you, if he walked into your board with that sort of stammering thing, the way that he talks about it, he doesn't convey that high conviction that it's going to work. But we know that it probably will, that the rocket will take off as scheduled, because he's been doing it for 20 years. He's been blowing away expectations. So if you want, I'm not really into the semantics of it, doesn't matter to me. You can call that charisma. We choose to separate that out and say that this is something else, competence, expertise, as you might put it.
Well, let me ask you a question. So if you were to dig into Elon Musk and his companies and who he surrounds himself with, would you think that he surrounds himself with people who possess the skills that he lacks?
I don't know, but it wouldn't surprise me if he did. I would say he does have that rock star status. I mean, even I watched Neuralink. Did you see it recently where they had the thing in the pig? And I watched him struggle when the pig wouldn't come out from behind the scene, and he didn't know what to say, and he was it was not great on the fly in there. And I went, this guy doesn't have what a Steve Jobs has in this situation, but he's got a chip implanted in a pig's brain, and it shows you all this cool stuff. So he's got the expertise. I don't know about his team surrounding him.
And I do think he has one thing that would, the other thing about charisma is, like we talked about, there's context. He has vision that is inspiring. And even if he doesn't say it in the most amazing, technically charismatic way, you know, even if his words don't have the conviction, the vision is what attracts people. So people who might be able to make more money elsewhere will go to SpaceX because they want to put a man on Mars and save the planet. Or they'll go to Tesla because they believe global warming is a huge issue and they're going to save lives. And so I think one thing he has done extremely well is laid out a vision that attracts people, even if you don't come out and say it perfectly without stammering. And I think that's, I would put that somehow in his charisma. And I think it's a big part of why he's such a celebrity.
But would you say that maybe he succeeds in spite of his lack of charisma? Because he has other factors. The point I'm making
I think he's a genius.
You bring up a very good point. there's always going to be anomalies to everything. And there's going to, and by the way, in case, like, for example, Zuckerberg, okay, maybe he doesn't have charisma. In fact, he doesn't have charisma, but his brilliance,
yes,
in engineering and vision, right, that made up for that. Mm-hmm. And clearly there was other people along the way in his journey. Okay, so how would he need charisma? Why would he need charisma? Well, he probably needed someone like that Sean, what's his name from
Napster?
Napster,
guy.
Right? Yeah. Sean, okay, anyway.
Anyone.
Now, again, I'm not, so the point is that that person, someone had to bring in the bankers, right, and talk to them. Now, so again,
Parker.
Sean Parker. Sometimes an idea is so great,
yeah,
and someone is so brilliant, they can get away with that, right? Clearly, right?
Yeah. Well, it's also what you define success. Because you're saying successful. Like, if success is having a huge network of friends and being someone who's respected and having a great dating life, but if success is money, you could just be a quant hedge fund guy who's never, true, I don't know, you could be charismatic, but you never interact with anyone. You write
there's
an algorithm.
Ways, right? Yeah.
$100 million, that's more money than I have. So that's, it depends on what your definition of success is, whether charisma is important or not.
The question is would his life be even better? See, it's not just money, it's your quality of life.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that someone like Elon Musk says to himself, you know, I really should work on this. I'm kind of quirky. Or he says, you know what? My quirkiness is working for me at this point. It's almost my brand is based on quirkiness. And he's almost created his own little reality distortion field around mm-hmm. him. But let me just, before you answer that, there's one other thing about Elon Musk. Belief.
Mm-hmm.
His self-belief, and that's intoxicating to people. I believe that at the end of the day, if a belief comes through combined with a track record of success, it overcomes a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Problem is that Elon Musk's formula is not duplicatable. That's the problem for someone like you or me who teaches people to succeed. I can't say, okay, just do what Elon Musk, be quirky and don't communicate well and just go invent something and then have four successes and you'll be rich.
Yep.
Not probably a duplicatable path to wealth.
Tougher path, for sure.
Yeah. So what happens is the idea is, okay, how do we stack the deck in our favor as much as possible? Clearly, by being charismatic, it opens up doors. It makes raising money easier. It makes attracting the right people into your life, partners and business easier, communicating with your customers and so forth. So it's really more about that. What are your thoughts?
I agree. And I also think I've never heard anyone regret having charisma, if that makes sense. Like, the pursuit of fame can be hollow. Sacrificing your relationships for money, people will regret. But I've never seen someone say, I wish I had worse friendships, or I wish my relationship in dating was worse. I wish people didn't listen to me as much when I spoke in groups. So it's a weird question, because you don't need success to be charismatic, and you could be incredibly happy without it. But it does seem like when people learn the skill and focus on it, they find it very rewarding.
Who's the elephant in the room when it comes to charisma? There's one person that stands out. Like, you have to kind of dissect them to, like, say, okay, let's make sense of this, all right?
Got it.
So how would you describe that?
Do you mean, like, the most charismatic person that we've covered or looked at, or?
Let me put it this way. I won't be so quiet. Donald Trump.
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
How do you unpack?
He blew my mind.
Oh, we've done tons of videos.
Yeah, so how do you unpack that? Because on some level, he breaks so many rules, but he's, you know, has 70 million people who literally love him.
Yeah.
Probably 60 million, 10 that just voted because they were just...
yeah. No, I think he's you have to say he's charismatic, whether you like him or not. You have to say he's charismatic.
Oh, by insane, I mean incredible. So 2015, Donald Trump is in the Republican primary, and I start getting these messages, you got to do a charisma coverage of Trump. And I'm going, that joker? Who are you talking about? No way. I get enough of him, and I go, okay, I'm going to watch some of it. And I remember my jaw hit the floor. I was like, this guy is going to win the presidency. And I actually made a bet before he won the Republican primary. I didn't know it was illegal at the time. I found an Australian bookie,
I bet money
that he was going to win. And he wound up winning. But what I saw in him was, it's a charisma that is perfectly suited for the times, which is, it's a media charisma, because his charisma is so polarizing, right? But it plays well in short snippets on TV. I don't know what he's like in person. I've never sat down with him. But if you look at his interviews, he will say the word winning about 16 times in 30 seconds. And I've got clips of it. We're going to win. So that repetition, that works with the technology of the 24-hour news cycle on the television. In addition, he's got these brandable things. You've got Crooked Hillary, Make America Great Again, Lion Ted, Little Hands Marco, right? And he just went down the line of the Republicans and not, you know, weak Jeb. And I watched him. He found that the audience reacted to weak. He's got this incredible ability to read an audience, see what's working, and implement it in real time. And I think it's instinctual for him, because I was watching some of the debates, and when he said weak and the audience went berserk, he didn't let go. And he just kept going. And he put Jeb Bush out with $100 million of spending. He made him look like a chump. So he's got a ton of stuff going on. The insults are incredible. He has a way of injecting humor as when he's in hot water that, you know, if you've ever been caught doing something bad, but you can make the person laugh as they're trying to be mad at you, you know, you're out.
You've seen the clip where he's being accused of being a misogynist, and it's something that could potentially
only
hurt his campaign.
Rosie O'Donnell.
And in one joke, and the audience being there is incredible, because the audience laughs. Now you're watching on TV, you see the laughter, it gets a bit of a mirroring effect. And so with that one joke, he just throws the whole argument
and
away.
And Megyn Kelly's go, wait, and it's over. The moment
Whereas with
gone.
No audience, maybe she'd have a chance to interject. But with that laughter hits, it's like a water on a duck.
Holy, that was a classic line, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, he knocked it out of the park. And I would say I didn't make the same prediction this year, because he seemed, I don't know if it was the job of the presidency, less on. I think he should have, 2016 Trump would have knocked Joe Biden out easily. Would have been the easiest layup for him. I don't know what was going on in his life. I imagine the pandemic, being the president, all of these things. But I saw his instincts take a dive in the first and second. So the first debate, where he would not be quiet the whole time, talked the entire time, that actually wasn't how he was with Hillary Clinton. He had these barbed interjections, because you'd be in jail.
Yeah, he'd wait for her to screw up, and then he'd pounce. He wouldn't just cut her off the whole time.
And so he came across as a bully and a jerk, as opposed to just those really incisive, cut her legs out from underneath her. And that was mostly the first debate. I'm trying to think of the other moments in the debate, but he was...
Well, he also, I think he found an angle he liked, which is that Joe's old or has dementia or whatever you want to call it.
Sleepy Joe. That clearly didn't really connect.
And it didn't resonate with people who weren't decided. So his base might have loved it, but no one switched because of Sleepy Joe. And
Maybe senile Joe would have been better, you know?
He didn't experiment with it. And I think, to be fair, like, he got COVID, he's running the country. Whereas when he was running in 2016, it was his only job was to run for president. But I think that those tactics that worked, he abandoned them, because each of those nicknames wasn't the first. He didn't immediately get Weak Jeb, Lion Ted. He tried Lion Hillary, and it didn't work because he did Lion Ted. So then he did Crooked Hillary. Yeah. And yeah, he just kind of didn't go back to that same playbook.
Interesting.
And so I think his base clearly was very rallied by him, but he didn't discredit Joe to the people that were going to vote for him before, let's say, October.
There was a lot of confirmation stuff. So just to elaborate on this last point is, if you think of Hillary, Crooked worked because there was the Benghazi stuff, there was this emails, and it was plausible. Weak Jeb, he steamrolled Jeb. You go back and watch some of those. Jeb tries to talk, and he just runs him over, and he makes him look weak. So he's saying these insults and then making them come true. Lying Ted, and then he said he's a Canadian citizen, and he's making his barbed insults come true. Then he goes Sleepy Joe, and Joe Biden makes it through three debates without a ton of issue.
Yep.
Like, I was ready for Joe Biden to fall apart, stumble over his words, and he really did not struggle that much. And Trump didn't adjust. He didn't find an angle that was more plausible. His rigidity in the 2020 election is a big part of why I think he lost, because there was...
Did he lose?
Well, here we are. We don't yet know. We'll find out.
Wow, I mean, it's really... I'm concerned, you know, because I'm watching when you guys... Right before you guys came, there was stuff on TV. Like, they are not like going down quietly into the good night. You know, whether or not, I've tried to stay somewhat clear. I'm a libertarian. I'm Republican. Always have been. I'm the most socially liberal guy you meet. I'm fiscally conservative, but I think, you know, Biden's a disaster for the country. But I steer clear of politics, because at least for now, you know what I'm saying. I might not at some point, but. What I noticed this time, though, there was something, you're right, there was definitely a difference. And it wasn't when he was with his base. As you said, when he was on his rallies, he was on point, getting better and better. And I saw something, shocking. I watched people, like, I mean, the size of his crowds was shocking this time. Like, that's why I was really surprised when he didn't win, because I was like, anyone that could bring that many people out, it just seemed anywhere, it just wasn't quite adding up that he lost. Separate issue, right? But when he was on that debate, you're right, there was some lack of flexibility, I thought. Mm-hmm. And wait, it's almost like he liked it more than anyone else liked it.
Yep. Yeah, I agree.
And I think part of charisma is about, as you say, he heard something, he heard them laugh, and he keyed in on mm-hmm. that. Tried something with Hillary, didn't work, he switched it up,
yep.
Crooked Hillary, boom, and you're right. It had a certain ring to it, it was funny, it was clever. Sleepy yep. Joe, never really. It's almost like, by the way, yeah, old Sleepy Joe is like, it makes you think of like, oh, I'll be in the White House, like calm. It's almost like not the right,
no,
you know.
It'd be like if you were selling something and you made a statement about the product and the person didn't immediately buy, and then you made the same statement about the yeah, product. Right. You would immediately pull that sales guy over and be like, listen, this is not how we do persuasion. So yeah, I think to some degree, what you would see in sales is you would see people addressing different objectives, figuring out why isn't this person interested yet?
Yeah.
And I didn't see that same level of, okay, there's undecided voters. What do they care about?
Give me an example of times with Trump where you think he really screwed up, meaning he did not communicate what he really thought. He made a mistake. And you think of certain times that he really put his foot in his mouth from the perspective of charisma, way he really could. Yeah. Like, let me give you one of mine before you answer.
Like, I got one.
Yeah. I was wrong. I thought he screwed up with the whole sex tape thing, and he went full Scarface. He's like, I'm not a boss. I was like, whoa. And he was right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So after that, I was like, okay, well, maybe I don't know as much as I thought. Like, and I was willing to say, wow, I thought he was wrong. He was right. Kudos.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think I saw things happening. Like, for example, and I'll let you speak with, like, not denouncing Proud Boys.
That's exactly.
And he's done it in the past. Just, like, not giving them almost, making it too easy for the other side to say something negative. What are your thoughts?
That was exactly the one that came to mind for me. And I think what he might have lost track of, I don't know, I can't read his mind. But in that situation, you have to consider that everybody who's watching hasn't watched all your rallies, hasn't heard everything you've said, hasn't watched every news thing. This is your first chance to say what you want to say.
Like, I'm against it.
Period. Exactly. Right. Assume that they haven't heard it the other times, if you had. And he fumbled around that and circled around it and wouldn't say it. It was such a lineup knockdown to go, of course I denounce white supremacy. Now, can I denounce this particular group? I don't know a ton about him, but white supremacy in all its forms,
it was a miss.
That's such an easy
knockdown. It was a miss.
And Joe did it when he was like, I've never heard you say you support law and order. And he said, I support law and order and justice. And by the way, that's also,
if I'm kidding, you're thinking 100 times fast, I support law, right?
Yeah. And in the tweetable world, think of Trump's stammering. Even if you like him, you can't necessarily tweet it. But I support law and order and justice. That goes on a tweet. That goes on Instagram. That goes. So just by keeping it tight and answering it directly, it becomes more persuasive to the people who didn't watch the debate. Whereas even if you give a great lengthy answer for why there's a nuance around the Proud Boys and they're not what people think, you can't spread that to anyone who didn't watch the entire debate.
What do you think, getting back to charisma on command and the things that you teach, and I really encourage everyone to check out the website, at least check it out.
Check out the Trump video. I think you guys will like that if you've enjoyed this conversation.
Yeah, check it out. I think it's for you. Sign up for it. I think it's a great program, right? What do you think is the weakest part of your program? What could you improve about your program?
I actually have, there's a leadership segment that I made before I had been a leader in an organization. And so I came at it from the perspective of leadership in conversations, you know, mm-hmm. How to get a girl to like you, or how to be a leader in a group of friends that are all the same age.
Yeah, how to convince someone to quit their job and move mm-hmm. to Brazil with you. You know, that's what we had done. We had led a friend group. And so that's mm-hmm. what the leadership module was based on. But we hadn't yet run a company.
And now I'm running an organization, and I've got, it's a different kind of leadership. And I think I grabbed a word that is bigger than I was ready to take on at the age of 27. And I think I'm excited.
So you guys gonna improve that module?
Yeah.
And what would you say is what's the strongest part of your program? What's the part that you're most proud of? If someone's gonna go look at your stuff, mm-hmm. What's the part that say, if someone sees, they'll be like, wow, that's powerful stuff. Yeah. What's your best stuff?
Well, so if you want to check anything out before purchasing, of course, our YouTube channel, pick your favorite face of your favorite celebrity and watch that one. I'm proud of all of them. But in terms of the course itself, I think I think first impressions is awesome. I think the confidence module is awesome. I like almost all of them except the leadership one, which I think is lacking.
Here would be my answer. It's the action guide. which is to say, so we have a 60-day money-back guarantee. So you can join the program. It's only 30 days. You can literally take it twice. And then on day 59.
If they want, take advantage of you, right?
Yes.
But people don't do that because people are basically honest when they get value.
Yeah, exactly. So they can decide if it's worth the investment or not. But every single day has a 20-minute teaching video, but then it also has what to do that day to make it a habit.
Sure.
Because to your point, if all you do is get through Charisma University and watch every single day at home without doing the action guide, you're
passive.
But if you do the actions every single day for those 30 days, you will be changed. And so that to me is the part that I think is the strongest. And that's why I like the guarantee so much. Because like if you do the action guide and you don't feel changed, just get your money back. But I'm very comfortable making that bet. I like the action guide a lot.
All right. Well, you guys heard it. I endorse it. Check it out. All right. Charisma on Command. Guys, thanks for coming.
No, thanks for having
us.
I'm
going to come on your podcast as well.
Yeah.
And share this with your friends because they need to hear this. This is really important information. One of the podcasts I really like is it's just right on brand here. What all you guys and girls need to hear, because no matter what you're doing in life, whether it's business or personal, we all need to get our point across to other people. If we can't hold their attention, or we are unlikable in some way, it's like almost like trying to climb up a hill with a boulder behind you. So like let go of the boulder and go downhill instead. All right, subscribe to the Wolf's Den, share with your friends, and we'll talk again soon. Take care. All right, this next section here is about business and making lots of money. Here's the deal. I'm having a small group of people over to my home in Los Angeles, and the question all of them are asking is, what's next in life? You know, these are people who had massive success already, and they're looking to see what's that one thing, that one distinction that will take them to the next level of money and success. So maybe getting close right now to that 7 figures a year. Maybe you're trying to get to 8 figures a year. The point is that this is an opportunity for you right now to come to my house in Beverly Hills, Los Angeles here, right, and join with 9 other people, all of them ultra high achievers, to attend my mastermind event, which is led by me. Now, what's going to happen here is very special, and it's going to be nothing short of life-changing. You and this group of top business leaders are going to spend the weekend with me in intense, regimented brainstorming sessions, where you're also going to get to have some time, about an hour or more, with one-on-one consulting with me personally, along with a special breakout session where I'm going to be sharing my most cutting-edge secrets of sales, marketing strategy, things I'm using myself right now to scale my own businesses in a massive way. But the real magic, by the way, of this mastermind is you're also going to get to sit in the hot seat in front of all these other top performers. In other words, every person in the mastermind is going to have that opportunity for an hour or more to sit in the hot seat, where all the collective energy, brain power, and experience will be laser guided on you, focused on you and your company, and helping you take things to the next level. Things that you thought were impossible before this day will start to become very possible for you as soon as you leave. When this is over, you're going to go home feeling energized with new ideas, new plans, and most importantly, a network of very powerful new contacts who are going to help you make them happen fast. In other words, I'm opening up my entire Rolodex to you, as all the people who are attending to do the same. I'm telling you, the results that you're going to get here from this mastermind will be nothing short of staggering. Now, a little bit about how this actually works. First, you're going to fly into Los Angeles, and my driver, Abdul, will pick you up at the airport. We'll have your favorite drinks waiting for you at my house. We'll also have a world-class chef there to cater some of the best meals you've ever had. This is going to be fun, and it's going to be about learning and business and camaraderie, all the best things in life wrapped up in the one. I guarantee you will walk out of this mastermind event with a new, improved, much bolder, and more powerful vision for your future, a new plan, and massively powerful new context to take your life and your business to the next level. So what you need to do right now is go to jordanbelfort.com/mastermind and apply. That's jordanbelfort.com/mastermind and apply right now. Do not miss this opportunity. It's once in a lifetime and it's life-changing. All right, real quick, listen, if you're a CEO, you're a sales manager, or you're involved in hiring for your company, I want you to check out my new organization, Straight Line Hiring. What we do is we deliver expertly trained salespeople to companies like yours. World-class salespeople trained by me and delivered to you on demand. Go to my website, jordanbelfort.com. Check out Straight Line Hiring, the only way to grow your company with certainty.